I'm Jody Walmsley, author, keynote speaker, and happiness expert. I'm talking to you today from the Simply Laughter Online Summit. Now, my next guest is Sebastian Gendry. Now, Sebastian is a key player in laughter yoga because he took laughter yoga to America. He is instrumental in a lot of the research that is now out there, and he has now gone on to create Laughter Wellness. He's going to be talking to us all about his journey with Laughter Wellness. He's also going to be speaking about training as a laughter professional online, and then about how to make a living in a laughter business. So a wonderful professional session. Have a great time and enjoy. Hi, Sebastian. How are you doing?
I'm doing very good. Thank you. How are you? Thank you for the invitation.
Yes. I mean, I've been following you for a long time since we met back in, was it 2012?
I believe so, in Chicago, yes.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, you flew around the world to attend the 2012 All-America Laughter Conference, which
I did, yes.
Any year?
Yes, say again?
You could come again any year. So this year it will be in June in Los Angeles, Laugh Angeles in June 2018.
I hope to make it. No, so I've been following you for a long time, and you really have done so much with your research and everything out there. Now, can you tell us the story of Laughter Wellness?
Of course, thank you. So I came to the world of laughter in the mid-2000s, following a personal crisis. I had a stress-related burnout. And the emerging world of laughter therapy is what I came across on my healing journey. So the first approach I got into, the first technique I got to learn was laughter yoga, and I fell in love with this, And I just went full on with it. So I was the second person in the world to dedicate myself full time to teaching laughter yoga. Became for a couple of years the world operations director of Laughter Yoga International. And I've traveled close to 1,000,000 kilometers just offering laughter yoga trainings, US, but worldwide. I was on the road for a while, for a few years, every other weekend. And then I slowly developed this sweet and sour relationship, with laughter yoga, because I had accepted what had been taught as absolute truths, when in fact they were a partial truth. So the more I taught, the more I learned that actually there was a far big. I thought laughter yoga had invented that concept, had put on the map that concept of intentional laughter, when in fact it hadn't invented it. It had just put it on the world map. And so I started to come across various other approaches, the work of Annette Goodhart, who put laughter therapy, who had the first laughter club in Santa Barbara in 1975. Then I came across the world of the Spanish, Maria Garcia Cruz, who had the first school of laughter in Europe, in Spain, starting in 85. And then the work of other people around the world, and my mind just went zip, whoosh. And I got a little upset because it had delayed my own growth. There's so much I would have loved to learn earlier on. And the more I kept on that path of learning, the more my own understanding grew and deepened. And eventually we got to a point. So Madan Kataria, the founder of Laughter Yoga, was very gracious and never really asked me anything. I taught whatever I wanted to teach, and I just put the label laughter yoga. That was the essence of intentional laughter. But then slowly, my own understanding, techniques, approach shifted to a point where there was a bit of too much of a gap between what he was teaching and what I was teaching. And that's how Laughter Wellness was conceived or was born in the early 2010. It's the same idea of laughter, but here the words, it starts with a distinction in words and therefore distinctions in energy. It is never what we do that's important, but it's what's behind. So laughter in and by itself won't do much for you. You could put two people side by side, have them laugh, not hysterically, but with enthusiasm, and observe a completely distinct impact on both. Are you laughing at or with, for others or for yourself? Are you forcing your laughter or choosing to laugh? Are you forcing or allowing? Are you faking or choosing? So I very early on placed a lot of importance on words. And I went on a path where laughter is actually more of a, is that the concept of laughter for wellness. So I'm going to share my screen and give you a bit of a visual on what I mean here. Share screen. Here we are. So this is the Laughter Wellness logo. So in a nutshell, let me describe what it means. You've got different colors. So you go from the yellow, from illness to the purple, wellness, from the I to the we. It's a path of mostly group dynamics, understanding that others, being around others, is really the easier way to go towards yourself. When we laugh with others, we engage by choice through the movements, the behaviors, the sounds of connection, of joy, of wellness and well-being. With others, really, others are merely there for us as a mirror, witness for us to for who we are or who we want to be. It is a complete methodology, and I do follow that. I play a lot of attention to the chakra work and how we go from less to more. The foundation of healing in any approaches is safety. You need to create a safe base, and then you need to create trust. And then you can move on to higher levels. There is laughter in there, lots of it. But laughter is just a tool. This is about wellness. So the end result is not to laugh or to connect. The primary goal is not to connect with the essence, with genuine free-flow laughter. That's a beautiful if you do, but some days you will not. The ultimate goal of the laughter wellness path is wellness, well-being, to strengthen your immune functions, work on your mental health, emotional health, social health, and even spiritual health. And therefore, this is really after laughter. Mm. Looking for the benefit that laughter has to offer. And it's one step after. So it's all about the comma. It's not laughter yoga, it's laughter comma yoga. It's not even laughter wellness method, it's laughter comma wellness. And without getting too heavy, too deep, because I don't... let this be an interaction. You've got five main, this is an arbitrary classification, but I identify five main categories of laughter. So here, the laughter yoga deals with voluntary laughter, so which is simulated. Is it intentional? Is it forced? Is it voluntary? Ultimately, the stimuli is inside. It's not outside. So you fake it, you force it. I'm going to get back to the distinction between those energies. But essentially, here, that's the idea. You choose to laugh, you fake it. It comes, you laugh because you can. As opposed to spontaneous laughter, which is the highest, top, most pleasurable, to be clear, a form of laughter you'll get. And we all experientially know that. Laughter yoga, for example, or not specifically laughter yoga, but I hear a lot of wishful thinking in the world of laughter overall. One of the common wishful quotes is that the body or the brain doesn't know the difference, or the body doesn't know the difference between fake and genuine laughter. Of course it does. And we all know that. We all know, and we can all feel when you force or choose or mechanically engage through laughter, you will never feel as good as when you genuinely laugh. It's like comparing desert water, which is murky and heavy and loaded with minerals. Murky with mountain spring water, which is fresh and full of life. Very, very different. They're both of value, but they're not the same fish. So spontaneous laughter is something is of huge value. Typically, this is what includes the world of humor. The stimuli is outside, and you're just responding to a stimuli. Let me get back to this a little later. Stimulated laughter, that would be a tickling, highly uncomfortable in society, oftentimes a form of aggression. So let's avoid that. There's value there in specific situations, but mostly best avoided. Induced, that would be you get high, you take some drugs, you do something that impacts your nervous system. Most commonly, you inhale nitrous oxide, the laughing gas, which is a bad plan because it's highly toxic, it's highly acidic, but it does, it does somehow massively should lower your inhibitions, your nervous system, and then you release tension in the form of laughter. And then pathological laughter, you won't see those very often. Small percentage of the world population, mostly resulting from a nervous dysfunction, Alzheimer's, dementia, multiple sclerosis, medication that impact. And so you need to take medication because you cannot control your laughter. Something triggers you and then you laugh and you can't stop. So it's typically short-lived, usually known as pathological laughing and crying. So we are on those two, simulated and spontaneous. So I've mentioned earlier, and that's again how the laughter wellness got to separate itself or separate, got on its own path, because the framework, I developed a different theoretical framework for what it is I was actually doing. Five main areas of impact. The physical is the obvious. You laugh, that will give you more oxygen. You're going to work just by the sheer act of laughing. You're going to trigger or increase the flux of lymph, which means you're going to increase your immune responses, the lymphatic system being the engine of your other immune system. So you just laugh. If you just laugh, that has positive benefit on your health. Don't have to force it more. That's the old 90s idea of pain, no gain. That is not how it works. You don't have to feel pain. You don't have to force it, be intense. But if you just laugh, you're going to breathe deeper. And if you sustain that, that will significantly benefit you on every possible aspect of physical health. But then you have, of course, the emotional health. And that's the dose, or it can be the dose. Dose stands for dopamine, oxytocin. That's if you have engagement between people, physical contact in particular, respectful. Serotonin and endorphins. It boosts your immune functions. It impacts your limbic system. It tricks your brain into believing that something's different on the positive side. The trick or the cue here is that whenever you accentuate any kind of behavior up to about 140%, you know, ish, this is not hard science, it's just an observation, then that 140% tricks your brain into believing that something's happening, and the brain will then react or respond, do what it's supposed to do, as if the emotions were real. We discussed before recording the distinction between emotions and feelings. They're not the same thing. Emotions are felt. They are, it's limbic system. You feel love, you feel fear, but there is no label, there is no narrative. Feelings are neocortex, they're thinking. We're putting a label. I feel like this, this means that, or because. So not the same thing. Mental benefits, and here this is about engaging both hemispheres of the brain. Again, not that you will benefit on all those five levels if you laugh, but you can, if you understand what you're doing. So the mental health here, it's about crossing the midline. The ho-ho, ha-ha-ha, for example, of laughter yoga is beautiful, especially if it's tied to a physical movement, because when we move, there's always one side of the body that initiates. When we breathe, we always breathe more from the left or from the right nostril. Typically, daytime, we breathe more from the right, and nighttime from the left. That's how our energies function. When we move physically, there's always one side that initiates. So when you go ho ho ha ha, you start with the right. So it's a 5-5 rhythm. Ho ho ha ha, 2 and 3, which means it's asynchronous. And as it's asynchronous, every round will force another part of the brain to initiate. And so my working hypothesis here is to say that you cannot worsen any kind of mental imbalance when both hemispheres of the brain are talking correctly one with another. Hence the value of brain gym, of crossing the midline, of doing activities that go from right to left and left to right, or hand-eye coordination, that kind of stuff. Social benefit, it is the biggest one. I would argue that most of what we know or claim, the benefits we claim are linked to laughter are not linked to laughter. They are linked to socialization, to the engagement, to what we do with others. Because when we engage, anytime you get a group of people to do the same thing at the same time, what you create is trust. Meaning what you create is integration. Because it's the outcome is I fit here. There's a space for me. I don't have to know you. We can work together. And we are social animals. And we're designed as social animals. Our entire biochemistry will work better when we are in society. So when we are with others, the others are merely there for us a powerful way for us to shift and change our own self-concept, how we see ourselves, because they are witnesses for us of who we are and or want to be. And so when you engage by choice, not by force, preferably, in any kind of behavior, for example, when by choice in the behavior of wellness, well-being, laughter, joy, connections, and you internally feel bad, sad, anxious, depressed feelings, emotions that are not aligned with those type of behaviors. Others, as you engage with those behaviors, others will witness you, well, you will witness yourself through others as, oh, I can do this, and it's working, and there's a place for me. And the more you engage, the more it will, the quicker it's going to actually shift your chemistry, and therefore shift your thoughts, because thoughts are electrochemical, not just electrical. And when you shift, and thoughts are always tied to specific chemistry, which themselves are tied to very specific behaviors. When you shift, change the behavior, you change the chemistry, and then soon enough, you change the thoughts. Spiritual benefits, because, and maybe we'll get back to this, that's my concept of point zero, laughter can reset the emotional clock. It brings us back to point zero, to here and now, which is here and now. There is no past, so you step outside of time. The mind, times travel, that's normal. It's an ego phenomenon. That's how we are able to define ourselves, because we have a past and we have a possible future. But when you step outside of time by engaging consciously into anything of the physical, which is something as a sound, a behavior, an awareness, then you enter into the pool of present moment awareness, and this is where the divine exists. You know, this is where your truth exists. This is where you shine. Joy, happiness is not an adding. You know, if I laugh more, if I do this, then I will be happier. That's not the case. It is an allowing, because it is all inside in the first place. The job is to overcome or manage to see through the clouds that are often obscuring those emotions, that realization from view. That's all it is. It's very simple. It's just not easy.
No, but it's great. It's true. It's an inside job.
It's an inside job. So moving on. So what, and then we can talk more about this one.
Yeah.
So what we're doing here, and all of us in the laughter field, whatever the approach, you know, I have my own take, which is my own expression. There are many forests, many flowers in the world, and no one is better than others. It's just a different take. And so this is what we're doing. So here, one, that's the TEPI method. So I made that up, building. Mm-hmm. So, a friend of mine, Merv Neal, came up with the EPR model. That's the emotions, perceptions, and reactions. And so this is what how I perceive the world. And again, it's my opinion, and therefore, to be clear, I am right.
Yeah, I agree. I'm always right.
So we have thoughts. And the way we think is tied to world. What we think, so be careful of what you think, because it will dictate what you say, which will impact what you feel. You know, so do the thoughts come first, or the emotions come first? It's the egg. I'm going to take the view that the thoughts come first, because we, as humans, and it's purely an arbitrary viewpoint, we as humans are endowed with the power of free will. So the human supersedes. The emotions will be the physical, the body, and that comes second. So we think, and our thoughts impact greatly how we feel, which leads to the words we say, and really how we engage in the world. Are we reacting or responding, being proactive or reactive? Either way, the loop is constant. If you start at your day at a top emotional level, you feel really good, or you've had a good in day before, a good weekend, a good whatever, you're going to start today with good thoughts. You'll feel good, you'll speak good, and of course you will see good, and therefore you will engage good. You will respond far more than you will react, and the loop will continue. But the thing is, we live in a world where there is this little tiny, messy, mean process called, psychological gravity. We go down, we don't go up. So if you start your day at 10 out of 10, and you are exposed all throughout your day to challenges, stuff that rubs against your grain, which is unavoidable when you live in society, then you won't finish at a 10 out of 10. You'll go down. And then as you start to think a little bit more, why are they aggressing me? Why is this happening to me? Then you start to feel not so good, and see what happens to you in not such a good light and therefore react from under you, respond. What we do is called a circuit breaker. You break the loop. It's a pattern interrupt. You know, so I didn't draw it here. I'd have to put an X. I don't know if you can see my mouse.
Yes.
If you put an X on any of those at any of those stages, that would break the pattern. And so you can, for example, break the pattern by engaging in a different type of behavior. When you change the structure, when you change the behavior, you change the chemistry, and therefore you change the thoughts, and everything flips. You can take coffee, for example. You can go for a run. You can have a massage. You can do many things. You can laugh. You can sing. You can dance. You can just do something different that will, in your opinion, and you will be able, you should be able to validate your opinion quickly, that will shift your chemistry and therefore shift everything.
Lovely. I love that.
And that's the essence. So we're going to go back. So your question was, what's the story of laughter wellness? Well, that's the story of my own understanding of what's really happening. Let me do one last thing here, which is on the unfolding. So we all, for many people are in the laughter world. They like to play. They like to sing, to dance, tell jokes or not tell jokes. It's the world of levity overall. Mm. Which is wonderful. That's great. Except society isn't there. You know, we live in a fairly uptight, at least I do. I'm based in California, and I evolved mostly in the Americas, North and South. It's a fairly uptight society. Lots of stress, lots of disconnection, lots of quest for happiness, which is something that's outside. Because if happiness is there, wherever there is, then clearly here isn't good enough. And therefore, it's a quest for something that you'll never find, because happiness doesn't exist, as far as I'm concerned. It's about peace of mind, being at peace with wherever it is you are. That's what happiness means. Well, that is what happiness means to me. And that's inside. It's not outside.
Yeah.
The way this relates to the world of laughter and how you can, without talking, convey those concepts through movements to people is very much built on this little graph. So here you've got, not to make it too obscure, you've got three different colors. And so here's what it means. When you start your interventions, your programs, your workshops, whatever it is you're offering, people at the beginning, this is the start on the bottom left, you'll have, people will have the highest amount of inhibitions. They won't engage too much because you have some introverts, some extroverts, but overall, they won't self-disclose. They won't show themselves as they really are. And therefore, their range of movement will be limited. They'll be a little uptight. They won't move much, allow themselves to do much. And as you slowly evolve in your session, then trust will unfold. People will start to understand, oh, it's not what I think it was. This is easy. It's good. I like it. And then they will allow themselves to move more, and as they move more, their inhibitions will go down, right? So ideally, if you've done your job right, whatever it is you're doing, at the end of your sessions, you haven't lost anybody. Nobody walked out. And now they have open-hearted conversations. They're completely them. There's no judgment anymore, and they are free to move.
Wonderful.
That's if you follow the progression. Again, I've mentioned this earlier, the only way to heal is to first establish trust and safety.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I've seen it, and I've watched a lot of your videos and seen how you've done it, just progressing. You've got to take it so gently. Definitely.
It is extremely important. So and that's kind of really what broke my, not what broke, what led me to say, okay, now I can't call what I do laughter yoga anymore, which is wonderful. It was a blessing. But it's too confusing. The understanding is, from my perspective, and maybe I'm off the chart, and it's just too limiting. So the world then took on a really powerful and important value. I couldn't say fake it until you make it, laugh for no reason. It just didn't resonate. There is a reason. I know exactly why I'm laughing. It's not reasonable. It's not logical because there's a clear reason, and I'm not faking anything. Faking is a pushing away of where we are at. This is about allowing. When you embrace the fact that right now you feel bad or uncomfortable or whatever it is, what you'll find always on the other side of acceptance is compassion.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, on that point of, you know, different modalities, different mythologies, you know, I think that a lot of things are based on certain things, and then everybody has their own take on it that works for them. But what works for one doesn't work for the other. And I think it's about finding your groove, what works for you. And this goes for any practice, whether it's yoga, whether it's hypnotherapy or whatever. I myself, I've done a lot of study, and not everything works for me. So I've chosen what I like, and I've made it mine, and that works for me. And so I love what you've done.
Correct. I mean, I guess this is you're very insightful and sharp. We live in a world where there is no absolute. So it's a world of many techniques, but the concept of intentional laughter is a concept, and that concept has no name.
I don't think so. Yeah, and I mean, I think that definitely it's something you got to make your own and find out what works for you, and that's what I love.
Yeah, so be clear as to what you're doing and why. Some people will like, so in a world of laughter, you've got two main, and I teach every year on 3 to 4 continents, and I've done so for the past decade, and that's the North and South America, Europe, and then the Pacific region. There is, because there's two big approaches to laughter. You've got those who actually love to not misbehave, but be silly, be very expressive, and very theatrically, lion laughter, the big pantomiming movement of everyone. And they just love this, and that's their truth, which is wonderful. And then you have the other category, which is actually bigger. Of more, it's just who need a bit more time. And it's unfortunate, because if you are of the first category, and that was me for quite a few years, it was delightful. I love to misbehave. In my head, it was a sweet revenge. You know, it was a sweet revenge, meaning I grew up in a world where I couldn't laugh, and therefore now I was teaching people to look like idiots. Again, as far as I was concerned, based on the belief system I grew up in, and I was great. And then something terrible happened.
What?
I grew up.
Very terrible.
I grew up. So, meaning I started to become aware. You know, I started to become annoyed at losing people, at the fact that every about 50% of all of the reviews I would read on Laughter Club, Laughter Yoga were negative, saying, you know, it was good at the end, but my, oh my, that was just odd. It doesn't have to be odd. It's all of value in the end. Just don't miss the progression.
Yeah.
You need to go less to more. And less to more is not your less, it's their less. And so... You know, what kind of behavior, people will always put, we are always in a constant process of judging. Always. Ah. And so if you do not put words, if you don't create a context around what it is you're doing, people will create one. And very often it won't be the one you'd like them to have.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. I think judgment is one of the biggest problems that we all have, and we're constantly doing it. I thought I was not judgmental, but one time I was told, you know, you really are judgmental. And it's true. We're just born to judge. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it this? Is it that? We are constantly judging.
Yes, that's the process of duality. We are born, we die, therefore there's a beginning and an end. That's the ego conscious thinking. There's an above and a down, a like, don't like, a can and a cannot do. But that's a mental process. It is, so back to what I was discussing earlier, the distinction between spontaneous and simulated laughter, the world of simulated, intentional, voluntary, however you want to call this, is of great value at the beginning, because so your the reason for your movements, there needs to be movements. Some, even if it's just laughter, there needs to be some action to shift chemistry. The step one is to shift from head to heart. In other words, break down the mask. and then sabotage those thought pattern that says, I cannot, I can, I can't, I like, I don't like, where all there is just what is. And then it is just delightful to go back into headspace, because that is where you'll get the most value, the most feel-good chemistry. Back into, so there are five main ways to tap into joy. Five, not four, five. All right?
Okay, tell them.
You've got laughter, clearly, or five easiest. Laughter, intentional, you just laugh, but you sustain the movement, allowing and choosing, not forcing or faking. You've got dancing. Music is great, but you can dance without music. You've got sort of singing. There's no reference. You can sing because you can sing, and you don't have to be perfect. You've got the world of games, playing. This is how we learn to process nervous impulses in a safe context. Right? And then the fifth category is highly important, and it's everything else.
There you go.
It's everything else. Joy exists and can only exist in present moment awareness. And everything else is anything on the creative side, anything that makes you feel good, that ties your conscious mind into anything of the physical. You can't feel good while washing the dishes. If you take that as a meditation, as you clean your toilet, as you paint, as you grow, as you do anything, as long as you do it completely and with love, and it, what you get is expansion. A resistance forcing creates contraction. Stress does that. You want expansion, because the more you can expand, or the more you go and turn into an expansive state, the more you can dissolve those clouds that are obscuring again the light that we have shining inside.
Yeah. And
it's an amazing process. It takes about, depending on the groups, and actually I have stats. I mean, I've been doing this since my 14th year full time.
Yeah.
It takes, with fairly uptight groups, about an hour. An hour to get to that stage where, okay, now we can stop. Now the mind, the mask is dropped.
Take
now
it off.
You are here. We are completely here. Now let's have fun. Where do we want to go? What do we want to create? And it's just delightful. So if you're used to teaching less than an hour workshop, man, go for three. Give it a try. It is just heaven. If you do this right, and that's the value, I mean, I can teach that. This is, I'm not the only one, but I can teach you how. This is not a gift. It's a skill set. It is just heaven. You transcend duality.
Yeah.
And now there's no you and me, there's us. There's not I like or I don't like, there's just what is.
Yeah, I love that, and I'm lucky to say I have experienced it with some of the corporates and the groups where I've done 1 or 2 day workshops with them, and you just watch them from the beginning, and then when they leave, they don't want to leave, and it's just like, oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah, Julie, you work with corporate. The world of business is typically, I mean, must often make technically very good. They know how to sell. They know how to do their stuff. Mechanically, they're good. What they don't really have is the human element. Is the knowledge that people relate to people far more than they relate to facts. And then the simple, very basic stuff of giving a smile is actually to others is giving a smile to yourself. You cannot have what you can't give, and you can't lose what you're giving away. The simple act of giving a descriptive compliment, not judgmental. So it's not a thank you or good job or well done, which means nothing. That's an opinion. Versus thank you for good job because I appreciate you because being descriptive, if the receiving end cannot clearly understand what they are being thanked for or appreciated for, then you've got not much. And so that's what you find on the other side of the laughter. So the laughter is the first step. You know, if you only learn laughter yoga or have a basic leader facilitator training, don't go into corporate stuff. You're not ready.
I agree. And I thank you for that, because that is something I know that I've seen and I've watched. And, you know, I've noticed, because I, like you, I've done my research, I've done my practice, I've made my mistakes, I've done my trials, but I know. And sometimes when I see sometimes leaders trying to go into corporate and then they get a bad review or they tell me, oh, but they didn't laugh. And I'm going, 90% of the time they didn't choose to be there, whereas your laughter club, they did. You've got to really work that that process and make sure you grow, you're getting them all on board for many different reasons. And it is, you're absolutely right. And I love that you're saying that.
I mean, look, there is no, so I love everybody. This is all wonderful. And
yeah,
there are no mistakes. I mean, there are no mysteries. It takes an average of 3 years full time to become a professional public speaker. Yes, there's a lot of money, or a fair amount of money, in the world of public speaking, but A, it's a highly competitive market, and B, it takes time. Every industry is a small industry. I recently did a TEDx talk, and I'm very blessed, I'm very grateful for this. I've been speaking for over a decade. I had never really been pushed to that degree. I spent close to 50 hours preparing a 10-minute presentation.
Yeah.
Over and over, and I'm very grateful for that. And that's kind of, quite honestly, in the world of public speaking, I am average to good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm a public speaker that speaks about laughter, so I know. And it took me exactly, I did about 4 years before I did it professionally, and I've trained and all of that. And so some of the biggest speakers are talking about TED Talk. They've been speaking for 10, 15, 20 years. To condense your message into 10 minutes takes skill. And I've seen a lot of TED Talks that have missed because they didn't get the message, you know. So well done to you.
Thank you. The key point here, though, is the practice. You know, so when you give, so it takes an average of 50 hours, 50, in any and every industry before you can start to call yourself a professional. Because typically, which is more like a 150 or 200 or more, because for the one delivered hour, you have to prepare and then do a follow-up afterwards. It takes time. And then within 50 hours, you'll be exposed to more or less 80% of the situations you will observe in the 50 hours you've been of what you've been exposed to, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So practice, practice, and practice some more.
Yeah. I did 3 classes a week for over 3 years. I did 3 laughter sessions. So, and that is where you learn different situations, you learn different questions, because especially if you're going to go into the corporate setting, they want to know. You can't be a leader just starting and lead a few clubs and then expect to have that knowledge or that experience of how to deal with a difficult client or a difficult person, or it only comes with practice. So I'm right behind you there.
You know, I have to give credits. There's I think some of the most professional people in the laughter yoga world in particular, I'm going to guess this is being part of our audience today, are in Germany, Southern Germany, the German Association of Laughter, Laughter and Humor Professional. Their basic training is 8 days. That's the basics. You've got four weekends. And that's the basic training. The first weekend is just an exposure. So what's known as the Laughter Yoga Leader Training, that's just the exposure. You're not there to learn. You're just to experience and get a taste. This is more for personal growth. And then you come back, and then you learn about how to facilitate group dynamic. And then they have a weekend on the psychology, the science. And then there's a weekend on the sales and the promotion and how to teach at that basic level. That may seem overkill. It is not.
I totally agree, and it goes for anybody in any field, absolutely. You have to know your stuff inside out, have been exposed to it in many different ways before you can actually call yourself a professional. And, you know, I love that you brought that up, because it is one of the reasons that I'm having the One Summit, is because I want to make sure that people see, one, what other people are doing around the world, where they've taken it, where they've taken, you know, from laughter leader, laughter teacher, and moved it on to make it their own. Because I think it's very important to niche.
Yes.
And to find what works for you and to focus on that. Because if you know everything there is to do about that particular thing, you will excel in it.
I completely agree. There are many, many different markets, and they are not all your market. To say or have the idea that what I do is good for all, and therefore I'm going to sell to all, is a bad plan. It's just too big a fish.
Yeah.
So I like you, and I thank you, because this is exactly why the Laughter Online University exists.
I love it. And, you know, I've always downloaded the stuff that you've offered and all of that, because I find all your things amazing. And this actually brings me to an amazing question about online training and How, you know, tell me about it.
Sure, sure, sure. So we are talking here about the laughteronlineuniversity.com. So it's an organization I started in 2012. In the midst of a lot of resistance. You know, many, we live in a world where many people, many have opinion, but no experience. And so the idea was, a lot of my esteemed colleagues just went red hot saying, but you can't possibly do that. It's not going to work. And I had, and I still have the following opinion and experience. A, this is the trend. There's a very big difference between training online and online training. Training online, it's you and the machine. There's no interactions. You look at stuff and good luck. You may understand, you may not. Forget that. The online training is you have, it's you. So you, we, let's meet on Skype. So we can't meet in person. So we'll have those interactions on a specific day, a specific time. And if you can't make it, so sorry, not going to work. And you have a blend, and you have blended learning, which is a mix of the two, where you have. So this works really well. It's not designed to replace in-person experiences. You can't beat that. And number one, some people will never, cannot come to an in-person event. A, B, in-person events are limited in time. There's only so much you can practice. And it's pointless, from my perspective, to spend money, effort, energy to go somewhere where someone else will speak what you can read. The value of in-person experience, of teaching is to, okay, you've learned on your own. Now let you can practice what you've learned. And I'm going to make sure you really understood. So I'm not here to teach you some new stuff, but make sure you understand what you've learned. So we go up one gear. And so in the context of the online university, that's exactly what we do. What we do. And we now have students in 82 countries and it does work really, really well. And it's a mix of, you have online material, very in-depth, you can spend as much time as you want to learn. Then you have homework, interactive quizzes and interactive elements. And then you have interactions with a mentor, someone who says, okay, well, you've learned this, you teach it to me. Or who will probe your knowing. Make sure you really have what you have. The only real challenges is when it comes, it needs a bit of technology. When you teach, then you have to videotape because the tutor isn't there to see you live. And again, it's not as good as an in-person experience, but you can get pretty far with this. And if you don't have any other option, then it is a very good and valid option.
Yeah, I like that because everything is going high tech. Another reason I'm doing the summit, other people are learning, schools are learning online. And it was one of my questions, when I started working, I thought, well, how would this actually work? So you find that it doesn't actually take away from the laughter online, or yeah, I mean, nothing beats, we all know that, you've said it, I said, nothing beats the real life face to face, but you still get the same benefits, right?
The answer is yes. Why wouldn't you? It is, again, let me step back, forget the specifics. It is never what you do that's important. So it's not just about engaging mechanically into anything. That will not give you much. You may have a very short-term benefit physically, but not much more. It is what's behind. What are the intentions, the energy, and that's the understanding. So when it comes to learning, you've got three main steps. You have the experience, where in the context of online learning, the experience is you watch videos or we have live weekly interactions. You practice, you need to feel. Then you have the understanding, which is actually even more important, because the only way to truly understand it, to have anything, is to experience it, which takes us to the third element, which is the creation. You will never be able to fully create what you don't fully understand. Yeah. So when it comes to online or in person, it's not really the crack, the main challenge. The main challenge is to really understand what's happening here and have someone. One last important point. Practicing is not what will make you perfect or good. It's a bluebird. It's a nice idea. If practicing was all that's required to become good at anything, every and any single donkey in the world would be a master and very rich and successful. There's a very big difference between practicing and training. Training has a process. And the process includes feedback. So you practice and someone talks to you and says, yeah, do this, do that, reconsider, look at this differently. Trainings are not nice places. Because, I mean, typically in a world of laughter, intentional laughter, voluntary, whatever you want, people don't, this is new for most of the population. So typically whatever you do will work because inherently you are inviting people to laugh on their own terms. And then you come to a training where, you know, I'm good, you know, it's working well with my group, and then whack, someone comes and says, yeah, but you know, man, you're playing very small here. Because now you're mixing with people who know their stuff. They're not new. It's not new to them. They've done it before for quite a few times and more time than you have. And that's the power of training. You train or should really want to train with people who know a lot more than you do. If you go to a training and you're not learning anything new, reconsider, you know, what are you doing?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And on that point, I mean, we spoke earlier about public speaking. I actually volunteered for 3 full years to work with the top thought leader, famous speakers in the world. I'm talking Brian Tracy, you know, all of those kind of people, Jack Canfield, all the big boys. Yeah, I managed them because I wanted to become them and I wanted to learn from them. So I was lucky enough that I volunteered. People were like, why are you working for free? I said, I get one-on-one time with these people. I watch them on stage. I watch them off stage. I watch everything they do. And then I have these times where I was lucky enough to speak to them. And I did that for 3 years. And now I'm ready to be a speaker. And now I've been a speaker for the last 2 years. So I agree. And then I would ask them, and they said, you know, I'm one of the few people that's got that. Back in the day, people used to bring coffee or tea and into the business, and that's how they learned, an apprentice or something like that, you know. And they said, people don't do that anymore. They expect to land and do the job. They said, we really admire you because you've done that. You've come and you're around us. They gave me a thumbs up. So absolutely, I'm on your side on that one as well.
Let me share one more thing. Share screen. Well, so when it comes to training into any kind of modality, you've got 3 levels. You've got the facilitator, that's level 1. You learn how to manage group dynamic, how to use your skill into your personal life. That's where you start. And then you have 2 options. The second easiest one is is the trainer. The teacher, you learn to train the facilitator, the leaders, the level ones. So you perfect whatever is taught at that level to the degree where you can actually confidently teach it because you've been practicing it yourself. But then there's a 3rd level that is often overlooked, where many people tend to think, well, that 2nd level is where it stops. It is not where it stops. This is, you're still at the fairly beginning of your journey. The 3rd level is what you've been discussing, Julie, what you've done, and that's the consultant, where you put in the work, you study, and it's not just about practicing. Again, practicing is good, but not enough if you really want to grow and excel at your field. It's about training. Training has a feedback process. Either you have a coach, which is highly advisable, or at the very least, you tape yourself, you watch the videos, you analyze. No, it's not just about the message. But first of all, do you fully understand your message? Are you able to verbalize it? The more you're going to move up in the food chain, the more you will have to articulate the benefits. And this is not just about laughing. Why are we laughing? It's not about the laughter. It's about the essence of laughter, the connecting with the joy, with the inner child we have inside. The key concept, like the flip it from Stephanie, I forgot her name, from England, who came up with that idea, which I found a beautiful. Flip it. F is focus on what you want. Focus on what you want. L is language, locus of control. Beware of the words you use. Beware what you say. I is ideas, P is interrupt, it's practice, patience, perseverance, it's passion, it's planning, prioritization. I is intention, T, trust. You know, how it's about, wow. That 3rd level is about being able to articulate, explain, go deeper. Laughter in our society is cheap. And so that is, so you can learn, of course, we offer the Laughter Online University and the Laughter Wellness Institute offers those levels. But this is really about, how much do you want to learn? How far do you want to go? I wish I had that work had been done earlier. I came up with all of that stuff, and it was a fairly painful and very time consuming process.
Yeah, I know that because as a new leader back in 2012, I was hungry for knowledge like you, and I wanted to know why. My favorite word is why. I want to know, why is it like this? Why is it like that? So I hear you, and I love the work, and I thank you for it because you've been awesome. Yeah, now, one question. What advice would you give to laughter professionals or people that wanted to be a laughter professional?
So understand the law of nature, the law of the farm. I think it's how it's called. When you plant a seed in February, you don't harvest in February, nor do you harvest in March, nor April. It things take time. So when you do not assume that, well, laughter, yoga, why, I mean, I had those questions quite a few times at the beginning. Why do I even have to, what are we going to do for 2 days? You know, you just fake it. It's what more is there to say? And I mean, and that was me. That was my first training. I spent a week in India. We had 1.5 session. Manankataya, the gift of Manankataya is not to have invented anything, but to have said, look, I've got this thing. It works for us. You take it.
And that is awesome. I mean, that was great that he did that.
On a world level, and that was his gift. The Manankataya is not a creative guy. That's not his gift. He has many gifts, but being creative is not one of them. I spent a whole 7 days with him. We were sent home with 18 laughter exercises from his perspective. That's the very Indian perspective. It's the concept, the idea. Just fake it, just laugh, and make it up. And within a few months, I had turned my 18 exercises into 200, and then I just went from there and spent time on with the Laughter Online University. You'll find I put a free post a few years ago on how to create over 115,000 variations on the base end with any given one exercise. This is not difficult. They're just mostly unusable because they're just too far out. But then, you know, and it took time, you know, what is safe? What type of activities can be done with any time, with anybody, anywhere, without them, whoever they are, even thinking, ooh, this is a little bizarre. And then what is playful, which is the step two, once you have the beginning of the chemistry of play, and then what is out of context? And that tends to be most of a lot of the laughter yoga exercises, the theatrics. But you need, so my advice is take time to learn more, explore. Of course, I have a bias. It's not the only one. You've got many different schools of laughter around the world. So find one that you resonate with, someone that you know has experience, not doesn't say, just say, I'm good, that can back that up. And at the end of the day, whoever you pay to train with, make them work for your money. If they accept your money, they accept the responsibility that comes with the money, which is to train you. So learn more, find. I love the work of Steve Wilson in the US, World Laughter Tour, very in-depth. I don't resonate with it, but he's done a lot of work, and it's very valuable. I love the work of Corinne Cosseron in France, if you're French-speaking, the Rigologie. She's done an amazing work. The work of Maria Garcia Cruz in Spain, she's the mother of us all. You know, when the Spanish went to see Manankataya in Frankfurt in 2002, they said, are you kidding? Is that it? I mean, there must be more, right? Because they'd been at it for years, almost a decade before him. And no, that was it. And so a lot of what you find in the world of laughter yoga actually came from the Spanish. So learn from Maria Garcia Cruz. She's great stuff. People in South America, Cico Alegria, Ricardo Llorente, amazing guys. And of course, can't deny, you've got the laughter wellness as well. That's in the English-speaking world.
Funny.
Mentioned. So find someone that you resonate with that can teach you more. Laughter yoga, and I don't want to put again point fingers, hasn't really evolved the past 20 years. It's the same thing. It hasn't changed. It's the same thing. Okay, you fake it. Okay, get it. And then what?
But the whole beauty I think of it is that you take it, that's where I started, that's where you started and a lot of people, but then make it your own. And I think that is important. But then of course you got to watch what you call it, but that's all politics and whatever. And anyway, I just love what it's been doing. Now I know that you've got a gift for our people watching today. You've been very kind, and it is a...
Well, I wish some people have one gift, and one gift is fine, but there is more. I have two gifts.
Yay!
The first one is it's a free, it's completely free laughter wellness starter kit. So it's a PDF, it's an ebook with the essence of what I've discussed today. And important links on where you can learn more for free, and of course also for fee if you have that inclination. That's the first gift. The second one is a video on how to, where I explain how to get a standing ovation anytime, anywhere. And that this is not just hypothetical. So a few days ago, at the point of this recording, I offered a TEDx video, and I want to believe, and I think I'm right, I was the first presenter ever on TEDx in the entire world history of TEDx, and TED for that matter, to receive a standing, arousing standing ovation, both at the beginning and at the end.
I can't wait to see the video, and it will be out by the time this is shot. So it will be out, and we'll put a link to that so everyone can see.
It's not a gift. It's a skill set.
It is.
Being a laughter professional is not about having a strong, powerful laugh. That's a gift. Not many have it. I don't have that. And you don't have to do that. It's both having a natural, hearty, contagious laugh is a blessing, but it's also a curse. It's a curse because if it's going to make you believe you don't really have to train. You're the engine. You just laugh and people will laugh with you, except sometimes they won't. Because it's a small group and they're stuck. And you're paid because you're supposed to know how to handle that kind of situations. And so that's where there's a skill set learned. And the skill set is thoroughly documented in different schools, different approaches, because you've got different perspectives. This is a world, the world of laughter is a world of creativity. There's not just the saying that classical music is ideal, doesn't mean, or perfect, doesn't mean it's the only one. And I would be ignoring Indian, Asian, African, South African music that are completely different, that have nothing to do, and I have centuries of history behind them. It's the same thing with laughter. You've got different, many different takes, and they don't compete. They just, each one help everybody, all of the others grow and expand. So yes, yeah. Do your own stuff, but don't just practice, reflect and share. Share, yeah. Help the world grow.
I mean, I'm a dancer by trade, a professional dancer, and there's many different types of dancing. You've got ballet, you've got ballroom, you've got Latin, you've got modern, you've got jazz, you've got all these things, but they all come from dancing. So you see, it's absolutely, and the thing is that you can't sometimes do one without the other, or the one will help the other, or, you know, you can mix and match and find your way. So I love it. I think that it's awesome. I think laughter is just opening up, and people are, you know, there's going to be loads more soon. And I'm so excited to hear about that.
There's a huge need. There's a huge, 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 huge need for not just a particular technique, but concepts. You know, I work, a fair amount of my clients says, come to me and say, Sebastian, we've had a presentation before. We thought that was good, but man, there must be more. This was just too limiting. Learn more, expand your mind, learn to articulate. Go, it's not just about perfecting the practice of teaching exercises and being creative on the spot. That is not a good plan. Do not be creative on the spot. It's good, but do not be creative on the spot when it comes to corporate professional for fee event. You want to plan them ahead of time and know where you're going into. And learn that progression, or learn to be creative once you first learn the rules and then forget them. But there is far more to laughter than just going ha ha ha.
Oh, absolutely. And I hear that. Now, I know that you've got something which is an online planner. What is an online planner?
Oh, you are so thorough. Well, the online laughter session planner is a tool I built at the same time I was creating the online laughter online university. And it built of the understanding that of the 20-second hypothesis, which states that if it takes you more than 20 seconds to find anything you're looking for, then the odds are against you and you won't find it. So here I was, you know, I was the creative guy, possibly one of the most creative in the world, in the world of laughter, and I was all on that title. I could come up with anything, anytime. And I had books and books upon books of ideas, and I read a lot, and I look at games. You know, I don't, there's no need to reinvent the wheel. But then whenever I wanted to do, I had a professional engagement, which was fairly often, well, first of all, I wanted to be up for fun for me as much as for them. So I have never really done the same session twice, ever, in terms of exercises. The key concepts are the same, they don't change, but you know, to do the same thing, that's just me, that's not my profile, I want variety. How to find that stuff? So I built this tool called the Online Laughter Session Planner with search criteria. So right now, it has over 1,000 exercises which are tied to 24 search criteria. So if I want activities that require no movement whatsoever, and that are safe, not off the chart, neither playful, they're just very safe, all public, and that are interactive, then I go click, 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 and bing, here they come. And if I say, well, hang on, and now I really want to have partner activities partner activities that work on Brain Gym. Click, click, bang, they come.
Awesome. I love it. And I had a taste when you started. I didn't see this one yet, but I've seen some other things that you've done, and it's just, wow, what a wonderful tool. So we'll have links to all of these down below so that everybody can find them, links to your wonderful gifts, links to your site, and links to this online planner. I think, yeah, Dan! Yeah, Dan! I could do that, but that looks bad, so...
The links are there, but you are awesome.
Yay! Sebastian, you've outdone yourself. I mean, thank you. You went into such detail, and I love it because people do like to know, and that's why I kept quiet and just let you go for it because it was awesome. So thank you so much for taking the time.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the invitation. This was the tip of the beginning of the shadow of the shadow of a fraction of one.
Absolutely. I have to work that out now.
there is a lot more. It's not about laughter. It's about life.
Yes.
It's about the out-breath. And it's this, again, it's not the laughter itself. It's your understanding of it and how you can deliver that understanding. I find tremendous value in this very simple practice because it forces unconscious, it makes what often are unconscious behaviors conscious. Now you can talk about it. Now you can see, am I faking or am I choosing, forcing or allowing? Am I comfortable with increasing the size of my little emotional box or not? And then the very first step to improvement is awareness. And method like Laughter Awareness and so many others help you become more aware. Thank you.
Wonderful. Sebastian, thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you.